Firefighters in several states west of the Mississippi River are battling wildfires. According to the National Interagency Fire Center, there are 42 uncontained large fires burning in places like Nevada, Oklahoma, and Montana. So far, 2017 is the second hottest year on record after 2016, and recent record-breaking high temperatures in California and the Southwest are increasing the threat of wildfires. Wildfires have been getting hotter and burning longer in recent years. And writer Gary Ferguson looks closely at what's happening in his new book. It's called Land on Fire. And Gary Ferguson joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you, Jeremy. Good to be with you.
And I want to start with climate change, which you bring up in this book a lot. You write that the fire season is 75 days longer than it was in 1972. There are more rain-free days. There are warmer temperatures in the West. How much worse is the fire season? How much worse are wildfires because of climate change?
Well, the most comprehensive study to come out last year, kind of a collaborative effort between Columbia University and the University of Idaho, suggested that when you pull out all the natural climate change factors, things like ocean circulation patterns and whatnot, human-caused climate change is probably responsible for doubling the number of acres burned since 1985. So it's a very, very fast change. And it looks like from all the evidence out there that this is just simply going to be worse before it gets better.
The other thing is that humans are moving into areas that they didn't live in before, which means that when these fires burn, they might threaten homes more often than they used to.
Absolutely. And that's part of the perfect storm going on. There's something that land use planners refer to as the wildland-urban interface, and that's exactly what it sounds like, people moving into the edge of large swaths of vegetation and in pretty fire-prone areas. And remarkably, 1 billion acres are now in the wildland-urban interface. So that's about 40% of the landmass in the United States. And 200 million acres of that, about 70,000 communities, are living in land that has been designated as high risk for wildfire in the coming years.
And fires don't just destroy homes or buildings and forests. They also have a real effect on air quality and water quality. Tell us about that.
Well, they really do, especially these as of late in the last 15, 16 years, we've had 10 full seasons with at least a dozen so-called mega fires in them. And mega fires are loosely defined as being 100,000 acres, which is a very, very large fire. When you get a fire that big, it creates the kind of heat that can sterilize soil, and it also can actually vaporize vegetation in a way that it creates a sort of a silicon-like covering over the forest floor and turns the soil what's known as hydrophobic. So in the face of that, you've got a forest that can't really come back as far as revegetating itself in the same way, and it's very prone to landslides and debris slides and things like that.
Has that always been the case after a fire, that it's hard for the forest to come back?
Not so much. And while there have always been the occasional, you know, big fires, they have gotten much, much more common since roughly 2000. Typically, in the days of thousands of years before Europeans and Anglos arrived in the West, there were what were called stand maintenance fires burning through. And they were fairly low temperature, smaller fires, 6 to 8 foot tall flames. And they would actually be very healthy. They are very healthy for the forest. And so by eliminating those stand maintenance fires, we allowed the fuel load to build up to an incredibly high degree. We've got about 300 million acres in the West now with unnaturally heavy fuel loads. And so now when the fires go through, they hit these accumulated fuel loads, and that's what makes them hot, that along with climate change. And that's what's sterilizing the soil to a degree and creating these hydrophobic soils to a degree that simply wouldn't have happened with this kind of regularity 50 or 100 years ago.
And by the way, that just brings me to a photo that's in your book of a tree, and you can see all the rings, and you can see exactly when the fires have happened over time.
Yes, it's remarkable. You can cut down an old tree, maybe a 350-year-old tree, and actually scientists cut down a number of these trees in a given 100 acres or so of woods. And they can, as you suggest, see these fire scars, as they're called. And from those fire scars, they can tell the size of the fire, the kind of moisture that was available that year, the direction of the fire, and they can piece together the history of fire. The Native Americans out here have long said that trees are the story keepers of the landscape, and really they're proving to be exactly that for fire researchers.
Tell us about the ponderosa pine, which is so important to this whole issue.
Well, the ponderosa pine is a great example of how the landscape has adapted itself so beautifully across many thousands of years to have fire as a presence. Fire is really an ecological force for good in a lot of ways. The ponderosa pine is one example of dozens and dozens that adapted to live in a fire-prone environment. It tends to drop its lower branches as it gets bigger so that when fires come through, there aren't these what are called ladders for the fire to climb up the tree and destroy the tree by burning the crown. It's developed very thick bark, an inch and a half, 2 inches thick, so that when normal these stand maintenance fires would come through, it wouldn't harm the cambium layer, which is the essential way that nutrients get up into the canopy of the tree. And on it goes. We've got trees that have adapted with so-called serotonous pine cones that only open in the presence of flame to reseed the ground for the next flush of their trees to return to life. And so lots and lots of really intriguing adaptations that certainly suggest that fire has been on the landscape for thousands of years.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Gary Ferguson, whose new book is called Land on Fire. And it seems from your book like one of the big problems is we've been overdoing it in terms of fire suppression, trying to put out too many fires.
Well, indeed, that's true. Back in 1910, that big burn I mentioned where 3 million acres went up in smoke, tremendous amount of timber loss. A fledgling agency called the U.S. Forest Service that was created by Teddy Roosevelt in 1905 was trying to get its feet on the ground, trying to convince Congress there was a reason for it to be in existence at all. And it took it upon itself to become the firefighting agency. And it did a beautiful job. It even came up with a slogan, which in hindsight was ridiculous, that called the 9 a.m. rule, that if any fire broke out, they would be on it and put it out by 9 o'clock the next morning. Of course, that didn't always happen. But it gives you a sense of how excited and eager they were to battle fire. Fire was really thought of as an enemy. We went to war with wildfire. And we put out fires that, in truth, in hindsight, should have been allowed to burn in wilderness areas where structures weren't threatened or human life and safety wasn't compromised. Those fires should have burned because they would have done the same kinds of good work that those stand maintenance fires had done for a long time, cleaning the forest floor, limiting disease, and returning the nutrients to the soil so that new flushes of even more nutritious life could be available for the wildlife of the forest.
So do they still operate in that way? Are they still fighting too many fires?
Well, not necessarily. Back in the 1980s, your listeners may remember in 1988, there was a tremendous collection of fires in Yellowstone. And after that, there was a pretty big reorganization of policy to allow fires to burn in wild areas, again, where there weren't structures or human lives threatened.
But now there are so many more structures everywhere.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So we've got so many more structures. And in truth, we're just not doing a very good job getting on top of these heavy fuel-laden forests with what are called treatments. And that could be either a prescribed burn, where you go in and intentionally burn, or thinning operations to reduce the flammability of the forest. A typical state like the one I'm speaking to you from, Oregon, tries to get about 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 acres treated a year. They've got a backlog of 500,000 acres. Plus, you have to do that every 8 or 10 or 12 years. And there's simply just not the money to get ahead of this problem.
Another thing I want to ask you about that you get into in this book, and it's fascinating, is how exactly the pyroforensic experts figure out how and where a wildfire started. How do you go into something that is charred and figure out how it started?
Well, it's interesting because a fire will burn in a sort of triangular pattern. So what the fire researchers and the forensic pyroforensic experts do first is try to find the point of that triangle, if you will. And they comb the ground down to a matter of a few square feet. And from that investigation, they can find where it actually began. As it burns, it moves ever outward and generally in one direction. You can piece together the ferocity of the fire, the direction it was moving from, the kind of char on one side of the tree versus the other, the way leaves can be sort of frozen by flames in one direction or another, and also by the winds created by the fire. So using all these clues, they've become very, very good at pinpointing the fire ignition cause, and that's one reason we know how many of them are actually started by humans as opposed to lightning strikes.
And I assume that new technology is going to make that even easier.
I think that's true. We've got an increasing capacity for satellite imaging to the point where we can see actually areas through thermal imaging that are so hot and dry, they can actually pinpoint the amount of heat coming off a forest even before a fire starts. And then as soon as one does start, that thermal technology allows us to see pretty much where it started and narrow it down very quickly.
That's Gary Ferguson, whose new book is called Land on Fire. Gary, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jeremy.